Jeff Nichols. I've been, oh, that's okay. We're not being formal here, but I thought we would get going. I've been asked to moderate a very informal discussion with Mario and these illustrious students of his. And participation from you will be invited as well. My name is Jeff Nichols, and I've had the great pleasure of being a colleague of Mario's for a couple of decades. I thought I would start, since the occasion for this, or the nature of the concert, is Mario and students. Oh, maybe we should do introductions first. In case, I mean, if you didn't catch, if you were sitting in a part of the audience that you weren't able to see composers taking bows, Art Krieger, Gary Filo, myself, Jeff Nichols, Maurice Wright, Mario Davidovsky, and Ed Jacobs. Thank you, Mario. Still teaching.
Yes, I think, let me first of all say thank you very much to KPNM and Edward Corey for dedicating this concert to students of mine and myself. And also thank you very much for all your friends and my colleagues.
Yeah, I thought I would start by addressing an easy question to Mario, to be answered as well by everyone up here, which is, as you all very well know, Mario has a reputation as one of the great pioneers of electronic music, and he's of a generation that was part of the post-war avant-garde. Exactly how avant it what he was specifically in that is kind of irrelevant, but it's an interesting thing for me to reflect on, as it's a concept that doesn't seem much talked about now. I'm not sure it's possible to have an avant-garde now. And knowing Mario as I do, he, like great revolutionaries of the past, Monteverdi, Schoenberg, who you care to name, who changed the way we think about things, is a person whose philosophy of art, I think it's safe to say, is profoundly rooted in the tradition. So I'd like to ask Mario, what for you as a person exploring territory that was very new, particularly the resources of electronic music and the implications of that for the practice of composition generally, what was for you the essence of traditional musical thought you wanted to be sure to impart to your students? And you can ask them what they got out of that.
In hindsight, I realized that the way I teach or work with students, it's more than helping students find, how to compose. You cannot really teach composition, but you can help people learning how to compose. I realized that intuitively, the things that always I was doing is spending the necessary time that was different with each student characteristic to really, to the extent that I was, that I could, understand how the musical person worked. So actually, once I was able to detect certain patterns or lack or excess, I was actually working on balancing the thought process of the students more than working on stylistic or technical problems. But basically, I was always kind of trying to help the student do what I think that they did have, but they didn't explore. It's almost going to find in areas in the brain that were not used, and suddenly discover that, wow, when I push the work in that direction, they discover a whole area of thinking that they didn't thought before. So that's basically what I was kind of was the really the almost the focus of my teaching, trying to understand you know, how the brain worked to a certain extent, and then try to repair or help or inspire or criticize in any way I could. So basically, each student was a different, completely different, you know, proposition. Of course, you know, the, all the tradition I come from was always present. It was in the context, but basically that was always kind of my almost obsessive desire of help people discover their own capacities and also being able to control areas that were probably too crude or too overgrown.
You know, I remember you telling a story about one of your own teachers, I believe a counterpoint teacher. You came to a lesson one day and he asked you, you're correcting me if I've got the story wrong, but he showed you a picture or say a painting by Titian and asked you to identify it and sent you home to study art of the period of the music he was going to be teaching you before you would consent to continue lessons.
Yeah, actually, it was a very distinguished Hochschule teacher from Berlin, actually, that emigrated to Argentina, and actually the lesson before was Marta Argerich and Carlos Roque Alsina, two fantastic pianists that were at that time probably 13, 14 years old. So I used to come 1 hour earlier to my lesson just to hear him play, and what they were doing is basically studying Haydn. Haydn, Mozart, but there was not technical, classical or piano technique, but rather on analyzing the pieces. And the person that followed me was Mauricio Kagan. So it was a very extreme kind of context. Yes, he showed me some 16th century Dutch painter, you know, and you know he asked me if I knew who that person was, and I said, well, you know, it's, you know, maybe the times of Rembrandt, and he says, you don't know, so he just threw me away. And actually, I had to learn, he gave me a whole bunch of books, I had to learn about the period, and then he took an exam, after which he gave me a lesson.
Well, I mean, that goes to something that I think is a big concern for anybody teaching today, is the idea of any kind of a canon is almost politically incorrect now. Are there things that you think a young composer today simply has to know?
Well, I retired almost 10 years ago, and just to keep some sanity, I decided to have some young students, and I have two or three students coming home, and I find it very difficult to communicate. They don't know what I am talking about, and I don't know what they are talking about. And basically, is the is there are these young kids that are as bright and sensitive and intelligent as ever, coming basically from a context of spending their life with media and computer, and they have no idea of history, any of the histories, and. It's very difficult sometimes for me to decide how to teach them, because I don't want to, insist on principles that were or are very important for me, and assume that kind of. Information will be helpful to them. I find that, for example, through a long period of time, you I connect with them at the level that I find that we have something in common, and then I try to, you know, to work. I don't know really basically how to teach at this moment. Really, it's very very difficult because really. They don't seem to be terribly interested in the history of music or the literature, which I don't understand how can you are not interested in that. I mean, they would just simply say, I'm not interested in hearing that. And they are interested basically on the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years, 20 years of music, basically. And what I find is that somehow a difference when we were, you know, young kids deciding what to do, that somehow there was a certain idealism, tremendous amount of idealism and romanticism in the idea of being a composer that was not only, you know, go to perfect something, something that would be enlightening, something that would be a awakening, that we could do something that would wake up the mind and emotions of people, and, you know, and those considerations, non-practical considerations, were very important. What I find among the young composers, that everybody's talking about marketing. It's just marketing. You do something and you market. You have a computer. You can, and it's a completely different set of premises. But that's in a way frightening, and or not. Maybe things are going to be good again. But somehow there is that difference. Is that it's you know? I mean, the computer is an incredibly wonderful gadget, and the technology is fantastic. But in a way, when you spend a lot of time on the computer, you know, after a while, everybody's selling something, and so you start to sell yourself. So it's a completely different feeling of what music and society and culture is, you know, than when we were younger. So I don't know how you correct that. I don't think the young people are, you know, giving it. It's just the way the culture is moving, and you know, the power, the people that control the music business, you know, navigate the, you know, the profession.
Well, let me follow that up by asking my fellow composers here how Mario's thought about technology and his own teaching has influenced your work with technology and perhaps your own teaching.
I love the Western canon, and that's not universal. I think Mario is quite correct in saying that that perhaps the young composers of today are interested in the last couple of decades of music and not much terribly before, and there's a commercial tinge to it, to be sure. The colleges and universities have discovered this and they're falling in line, and they offer courses or majors now called new media. And as far as I can tell, it's these new media courses programs are. They talk about film music, perhaps, and they talk about a lot of technology and stuff like that, but it strikes me as a way of circumventing the pieces that I love from past ages. And I think he's absolutely right on the money in that, and I think this is an unfortunate change, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, the technology actually available is fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's a
the music is not fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, it's like somehow the technology went way ahead, you know, and there is a big space for really for composers to discover, really waiting for discover, because basically the technology is used in a way to imitate, you know, orchestral music or, you know, or chamber music or music for film and industry in a way. So you have this tremendous technology, but there is not really the enough, I think, demands for exploring the technology for what it is.
They know the film score to 2001, but they don't know Ligeti.
Or Strauss.
Or Strauss. Well, yeah.
I mean, what I find myself in listening to your music and that of your students is that there are two things that I think, one, no matter how radical the sound world being explored, I can identify that are transmitted from the Western tradition. One is that ideas have consequences. Mm-hmm. They're not just cool moments. And that you can have unfolding lives that are simultaneous, that one layer of events can unfold simultaneously with another and influence each other, in other words, prolifically. And I know you talk a lot about this thing.
I was talking to somebody the other day.
I see you nodding your look.
we were exchanging memories from bygone eras. And I remember telling that I probably was 9 because I remember leaving the town where that where I was going to school at the time. And the teacher was explaining that light moves, there is a speed to light, that it was kind of really mind-boggling. But more or less understood the idea that, you know, things move and we don't see it, but it's actually what we are seeing already was born 5 minutes ago, 10 years ago, and so on and so forth. And I remember that night in the country, in southern hemisphere, the spectacle of the sky is particularly very, very rich, you know. And remember lying on the grass with a finger, so I'm going to have an eye on top of the finger, and then I'm going to look at these different lights that come, you know, this light that come from the moon that didn't take any time, or something that takes 10, 15 years. And it was such mind-boggling idea about, in terms of thinking about time and space, that somehow that defined polyphony for the rest of my life almost. You know, in a way, something that, you know, I am almost 80 and I still think about, you know, almost the tactile experience, not really of really relating to in a way, when I started to study polyphony, those ideas really expanded the possibility of space time and thinking about polyphony not only, you know, in the classical way we are accustomed, but enriching the thinking about time backwards and oblique and actually thinking of the possibilities of really having three stories going simultaneously, you know, in a way like Carter will do, for example, but enriching basically the tradition that, you know, without polyphony, really, polyphony is the magic. Without that, we are in another music altogether, different. You know, when we leave that, we leave the great tradition of music that we leave, and, you know, we might get to another interesting tradition, but I am at this moment not interested in that. I am too old for that, so.
Well, I can tell you a story about technology briefly. I was an undergraduate, either a sophomore or a junior, and had gone to an institution that, in my mind, is synonymous with Amar Davidovsky, and this is the Composers Conference. That summer it was at Bennington College and migrated to other wonderful places since, and I met a number of lifelong friends at these conferences. At this particular one, we were in a little red barn, which was the concert hall, and a wonderful pianist named Robert Miller was going to play through a piece that he was about to play at Tanglewood the following week. This was the Synchronism 6. And from hearing it, at that point we had tape recorders and I had made little collage pieces and made funny sounds and really, really would have a great fondness for technology. But from the first note of the synchronism, when it didn't die away, and the technology transformed the piano sound back and forth, the power of that really impressed me. But the problem that came with it was that there was no longer any easy solution. You couldn't simply make a big complicated mix and hope that nobody would notice that there's nothing really of interest there, but it was rich enough. That we really were going to have to build pieces note by note in the medium of technology. And the other thing, which he gave us permission, I think, to use pitches in electronic music, which at that time was not such a difficult to do, but also aesthetically, even today, sometimes we get in trouble if we have too many pitches in our electroacoustic pieces. We don't get everywhere that we might. And that day will stay with me as well as the premiere of the bomb when we get out of that tangle.
Gary, your piece was entirely electronic. Do you also do instrumental mixes with electronics, or you prefer to?
No, I haven't, but I have some ideas. But what I wanted to say about, you were asking before about what Mario has given over, I think. I used to go in, we used to sit and talk a lot and look at music. And I would come in with a lot of movies. And what Mario was saying before about seeing each student as an individual and try to get into somebody's head, you know, figure out what's going on. So I was thinking about this the other day, and what I realized was that Mario, I think, the same way that his music is very refined and very complex and inventive and energetic, brings the same kind of quality of thought to his students. And in my case, I think he helped me to refine, to always look for refining what I was trying to do. And sorry, thinking, you know, I mean, looking back on this, I think, you know, gee, I was in the refinery with Mario, but I think that this is part of his giving over and his tradition to his students.
Have any comments about how Mario got into your head?
I ain't able to hear that story, so I don't know. I think about the things that I learned from Mario that I think so many students did, and I think about the way those lessons move ahead to the students I work with now. And they're very simple ones. For instance, work in the electronic music studio is ear training for composers, right? I'm sure we all have heard Mario say that. And I think about it with my current students. They come into the studio and there's a lot of whiz-bang in a very funny way because there's old tape recorders and there's old Moogs that I have in our studio. And they want to get in there and turn the dials, you know, because it's different. They don't use a mouse. And when they start trying to find a spot on the tape recorder to splice, they start to use their ears differently.
Wait.
They realize that it is ear training in a completely different way.
Are you splicing?
Yeah. We get special razor blades. they do start with that, and then we work through Pro Tools. But it's ear training in a much more important sense than just getting them to listen closely to their tapes. They listen to everything differently.
It's almost like microbiology. You know, you start a sound and you grow up the sound, and then you look inside how the sound is made and how changing certain things in relation to other things that the sound. So you spend an awful lot of time listening and analyzing, and obviously the training that you get is as fabulous. You know?
So you said that you're not so didactic. You're not insisting that they do, your current students do certain things. I am insisting that they do certain things, and they like it, damn it. But they start to listen to the canon in different ways, and they start to appreciate not just the electronic music canon.
But it's interesting, when I left Columbia and I went to Harvard, I had a big computer studio, and all the students coming were, you know, many very sophisticated already in the use of computer. So I defensively, since I was not sophisticated in the use of computer, I decided they would spend at least one semester doing that kind of thing. And they hated it.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated it. Because it was so primitive. When they finished, they loved it. Because they really discovered, you know, slowing down and concentrating in hearing all the details, really how much their general sensitivity was improved.
Well, I have to say, you know, with this piece, I thought exactly about splicing. You know, it was all done with my computer, but it was all, you know, I kept thinking back to sitting in the studio, making these sounds, hanging them on lines in the studio, and then, splicing, putting things together, and really listening to, it was like looking at something completely differently, which was fascinating and fantastic, you know. And so when I was working on this piece, started a couple of years ago, I all of a sudden I found myself in the same mode of thought And all of a sudden, my ears are a little different. My perception's a little different. And I think it's due to this kind of
attention. Thank
you for that. I'd like to invite, if anyone in the audience has a question for anyone up here, please feel free. Any further questions? Then maybe we should hear some more music. Thank you.